Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
This is Sarah Chaffee. We have on the show biologist Dr. Ann Gager. This is the second part in our ongoing conversation about a big new anthology from Crossway Publisher. The name of the book, Theistic Evolution, a Scientific, Philosophical, and Theological Critique. The book has contributions from several of our fellows, along with contributions from some well-known names in theology and philosophy. The book is making a big splash, and it's a big book. As the subtitle suggests, there is a section on the scientific problems with theistic evolution, and that section focuses on the evolution side of the theistic evolution recipe. Again, that's the first section. There is a section on the philosophical problems with theistic evolution. And then a final section on many of the theological issues swirling around theistic evolution. In my series with Ann Gager, we're going to focus on the first big section of the anthology, and in particular, on human origins. Dr. Ann Gager holds a PhD in zoology from the University of Washington and completed a postdoctoral fellowship at Harvard. She is a senior fellow of the Center for Science and Culture and serves as a scientist at Biologic Institute, as well as director of science communications at the Center for Science and Culture. So today we're looking a little bit at chapter 15, which has to do with DNA and humans and chimps. Could you kind of give us a little bit of background on this and how it relates to the theistic evolution argument?
Okay, one of the arguments that's been made in favor of our common ancestry with a chimp-like creature is that we share a great deal of similarity with chimp DNA. On the order of 95% is the best figure we have now. So people say if we have 95% similarity in our DNA, that indicates common descent. And that's the standard scientific view. Since theistic evolutionists accept the standard scientific view, they accept the idea that we are descended from a common ancestor with chimps, and that affects their interpretation of scripture, for example, and it is what makes them distinctive in their approach to faith and science. Since they accept evolution, it does definitely color their interpretation of scripture. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay, great.
So is it true that we are 98.7% genetically similar to chimps?
Well, that's a common figure that has been published a lot, and it was based on evidence from the sequencing of the human genome and the chimp genome. The first pass through the genome comparisons suggested that we were close to 99% similar. But that was based on just looking for single base changes. And later, people have come to realize that there are other kinds of changes to the DNA, duplications, insertions, deletions, rearrangements that need to be counted. In fact, there are a number of genes which are new in humans, a number of other features which are new and hadn't been contributing to the count as a whole. So the new number is about 95% similar. That was based on a chimp genome sequence that was done not completely, only about 95% of the genome was sequenced, and it's also based on aligning the chimp genome with the human genome, which means until the chimp genome is redone, without that scaffolding with the human genome, we don't know precisely how different they are. The scaffolding using the human genome will automatically make things align in a human-like way. So I don't know if that's clear, but the point is the current chimp genome is not 100% sure. It needs to be redone.
The chapter talks a little bit about DNA that doesn't code for proteins. How does this line up with the chimp-human genome debate?
Okay, about 2% of our genomes code for protein. And the rest of it, it used to be called junk DNA, and that's the case for both chimps and humans. If you look at what that junk DNA is composed of, it's got a lot of different features, which turns out are functionally important. There are repetitive elements in the genome that are human-specific called ALDU sequences. They look like elements that can hop around in the genome, but most of them are inactive now and cannot move themselves. And ALU elements are involved in regulating the genome, the way genes are expressed in the genome. They can turn on expression of the genes in that they're sitting next to. They can alter the way the RNA is edited after it's copied from the DNA. Now, that's a remarkable thing. For those of you who've learned biology in high school or college, you were taught that DNA is copied into RNA and then turned into protein. Well, in actual fact, there's a lot of variation going on. The RNA can get edited. Actually, its sequence changed based on, we don't actually know what. And the proteins themselves can get edited and spliced differently. So one gene can produce multiple products. Turns out that RNA editing is different in humans than chimps, and splicing is different in humans than chimps. So even though we may have two genes that look like they've got the same sequence, they can be producing different products. And that's really significant.
And does it seem like there's enough time for the change that would have to occur between the chimp genome and the human genome to even work out with current scientific timelines?
Well, I don't think so. And the reason is this. Two population geneticist mathematicians from New York, I believe, Durrett and Schmidt, did a study to establish how long it would take to get a single base change in a DNA binding site. A DNA binding site is a small stretch of DNA that regulatory proteins sit down on and then affect the expression of genes that are close by. So they ran the math, and I don't know if it was to their surprise or not, found that it took 60,000 years just to get the right base change, and another 100 times that to fix it in the population. That means to make sure that every member of the population has that base change. So that's a total of 6 million years. Now, if you look for how long it takes to fix two specific mutations in that binding site, it takes 216 million years. You have to go back 216 million years to the first appearance of mammals. To make a chimp into a human, how many mutations do you think it would take? Two?
Much more than that.
Yeah, much more than that. Just to get us to go from something like Lucy, the Australopithecine, to a Homo erectus like Turkanaboy, you can look up those names if you're interested to see the difference. Turkanaboy looks more or less human from the neck down and has a small head. Lucy looks more ape-like and could maybe walk upright sometimes. So there are changes that have to happen to go from Lucy to Turkanaboy, who walks upright and is capable of running. How many changes? Well, according to some scientists from Harvard, Bramble and Lieberman, they looked at the physiological and structural changes that would be necessary to make that transformation, which we know, if we are descended from chimp-like ancestors, had to happen to go from ape-like to human. It took, I believe, on the order of 16 to 18 different physiological changes, just in the bone structure, not counting all the other changes. 16 to 18 coordinated changes to allow someone to walk upright and to run, that's going to take probably, I don't know, at least 32 mutations, coordinated mutations, which means they have to be present and working together to get the functional organism. It's not enough to get them one at a time and then another and then another. How long would it take to hit 32 mutations? It's well beyond what Durrett and Schmidt said, well beyond.
Well, thank you for coming on the show today, Dr. Gager.
You're welcome.
We've been talking about a chapter from the big new anthology from Crossway called Theistic Evolution, a scientific, philosophical, and theological critique. You can find it at Amazon. It comes in at over 1,000 pages, but the beauty of it is that you can scan the table of contents and zero in on just those articles and authors you're most interested in. It's a fantastic resource, and you'll find many familiar names there, including Ann Gager, Stephen Meyer, Jonathan Wells, John West, J.P. Moreland, and many others. And check out the endorsements, an impressive number, and some impressive names there as well. I would encourage you to buy it and to recommend it to your university library. Again, that's Theistic Evolution, a scientific, philosophical, and theological critique. For ID the Future, I'm Sarah Chaffee. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.